Hey, Scott Spears back with you on a Getaway Friday. Friday, August the 2nd, 2019. Wrapping up the first week of the early show here on WWGH Radio. You know, the oldest morning show, maybe in radio and television at this particular point, I believe, is the Today Show, which airs on NBC. And I was just thinking, for anybody who's watched the Today Show for, gosh, when did it start? Sometime in the 50s. So it's been on close to, what now, 70 years probably? I know it's been on over 60 years. They always say something on the Today Show, a little line that they say it all the time. If you were to turn on the Today Show right now, is it on? Yeah, it starts at 7 in the morning. If you were to turn on the Today Show, they would say it at least 6 times a morning, sometimes more than that. And every host throughout the history of the Today Show has said it. Does anybody know what the people on the Today Show constantly say throughout the show? And have said all the way back to Dave Garraway, the original host of the Today Show. Does anybody know what line they always say? I want somebody to answer this because I want to tell you why they do it. Because it made me think of something in radio. Because Hugh Downs, who was the host of the Today Show for many years, told me why they do this. Because one time I said, why does every host of the Today Show say that? I mean, what's the purpose of that? Is it just a publicity thing? No, there actually was a purpose behind it. I don't think it probably doesn't serve the purpose that it used to serve for so many years. But does anybody know what you hear on the Today Show constantly? If you had it on in your living room now, you would hear it within the half hour. I think they do it about once every half hour. Does anybody know what's constantly said on the Today Show, the morning show? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. All the hosts have said it. Dave Garraway, John Chancellor, Hugh Downs, Barbara Walters, Frank McGee, Jim Hartz, Tom Brokaw, Jane Pauley, Bryant Gumbel, Katie Couric, Matt Lauer. Hey, that was pretty good, wasn't it? We just went through about 40 years of people who hosted that show. But does anybody know what they constantly say on the Today Show? Not a trivia question, just wondering if you know what it is, because it is kind of interesting. 740-383-9944. And if you let me know, I'll tell you why they actually say it, because the purpose is fascinating. Now, with today being, or tomorrow being the last day of the Ohio State Fair, today being the last day we're going to do our ticket giveaway, we want to get some more people entered to win the Happy Together Tour tickets, so we do still have our Ohio State Fair trivia, and we have a lot of questions left. So maybe we'll get some answers here. Here are the ones that we've had out there that we don't have answers to yet. The first Ohio State Fair was held October 2nd through 4th, 1850. Where was it held? Where was the first Ohio State Fair held in 1850? Does anybody know? What year did the Ohio State Fair move to its current location at the Expo Center? What year did the Ohio State Fair move to the Expo Center, where it has been for many, many years, continues to be there? What happened at the Ohio State Fair on the eve of World War I? Something significant happened. What did they do? What year did women become ticket takers at the Ohio State Fair? We talk about the 100th anniversary of women getting the right to vote coming up very shortly. What year were women allowed to become ticket takers at the Ohio State Fair? Why was the Ohio State Fair canceled? There were a few years where the Ohio State Fair actually was canceled, did not happen in the run. Does anybody know why the Ohio State Fair was canceled for a few years? And the last question, who performed at the Ohio State Fair, the entertainment, back to back in 1968 and 1969? Now you have to go back and think about 1968 and 1969. Who were the big entertainment people in this world? And this person performed back to back in 68 and 69, but did come back in later years and do several things at the Ohio State Fair. It certainly, those two appearances were not this person's only appearances, and I believe it's the only person to appear at the Ohio State Fair back to back. Now, I could be wrong about that. There might be another group that did appear back to back, but I do know this person did it back to back in 1968 and 1969. So who would have been a huge performer that would have been in demand to be at the Ohio State Fair in 68 and 69? Now we have a chance to win entertainment tickets to the Ohio State Fair if you call in and answer any of those questions. We also have tickets to the Dublin Irish Festival, which is this weekend. We also have tickets to Jack Hanna's Wilds, which are good, I think, through October. We have tickets to the Columbus Zoo, which I think are good through Labor. No, I think those are good through the end of the year, to be honest with you, the Columbus Zoo tickets. So we've got some things to give away here. Does anybody know the answers to any of those questions? And remember, if you're entering to win, if you're going to enter to get into the bucket to win the Ohio State Fair tickets, the 30-day policy does not matter. You can enter as many times as you like to win the Ohio State Fair tickets. 740-383-9944. Who performed back-to-back at the Ohio State Fair as the entertainment in 68 and 69? Why was the Ohio State Fair canceled for a series of years? What year did women become ticket takers at the Ohio State Fair? What happened on the eve of World War I at the Ohio State Fair? What significant event would have happened? What year did the Ohio State Fair move to its current location at the Expo Center? And the first Ohio State Fair was held October 2nd through 4th, 1850. Where was it held? Where was the first Ohio State Fair held? 24 minutes past the hour here. Give me a ring if you've got a guess. 740-383-9944. The phone lines are wide open on this Getaway Friday. 740-383-9944. Maybe I'll throw in one new question, since we've had those other questions for quite a while now. What TV show has taped a couple different times at the Ohio State Fair? One of those times was in 1997. What national television show has taped episodes at the Ohio State Fair? And one of those occasions was in 1997. So there you go. There's the questions. What TV show taped at the Ohio State Fair? What entertainment performer performed back-to-back in 1968 and 69 at the fair? Why was the Ohio State Fair canceled for a series of years? What year did women become ticket takers at the Ohio State Fair? What happened on the eve of World War I at the Ohio State Fair? What year did the fair move to its current location at the Expo Center? And Where was the first Ohio State Fair held in Ohio? In 1850. October 2nd through 4th, 1850. 740-383-9944. Tickets to the Dublin Irish Festival, which is this weekend. Tickets to the Columbus Zoo. Tickets to Jack Hanna's Wilds. Or a chance to win tickets to the Ohio State Fair entertainment shows. We also have free passes to the fair. Those are in there as well. If you'd just like to go to the fair and look around, we have free passes to the Ohio State Fair. Give us a buzz. 740-383-9944. Or if there's anything else on your mind on this Friday morning, we certainly would be interested to hear from you. 740-383-9944. Do want to remind you again, 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, will be having an open house at her museum on August 31st from 2 to 4 p.m. The museum's located at Primrose Retirement Community here in Marion, located at 1550 Wellness Drive. It is free admission. And Mary Ellen will be on hand during that open house to answer any questions you have regarding any pictures or any items in the museum. That big event is coming up on August 31st from 2 to 4 p.m. 27 minutes past the hour. Are there any people out there this morning that know the answers to any of these trivia questions? And at this point, if you know the answer, just call in and give it, even if you don't want a prize, because we would like to know that you know the answer, because I think that's how we all learn together. Now, there is something else that I want to talk about this morning that I don't think we're going to have a chance to do before the break coming up here in 2.5 minutes, but if I forget about it, if I forget about the thing I wanted to talk about, somebody remind me, because we certainly have time left this morning to talk about it, and I think it's a very interesting subject. Now, I've brought it up before on this show, and we've had some conversation, but really nothing in long detail about it. And maybe this morning we'll be able to have something in long detail about this thing I want to talk about, which I don't want to lead into quite yet. So if I forget to bring this up, somebody bring it to my attention so we can talk about it before the end of the morning. But the questions right now, where was the first Ohio State Fair held? What year did it move to its current location at the Expo Center? What happened on the eve of World War I at the Ohio State Fair? What year did women become ticket takers at the Ohio State Fair? Why was the Ohio State Fair canceled for a series of years? Who performed back-to-back entertainment-wise in 1968 and 1969? And what national television show taped at the Ohio State Fair? They've taped there on a couple different occasions, one of the times being in 1997. Does anybody know the answers to those questions? 740-383-9944. Phone lines are wide open. 29.5 minutes past 7 a.m. on this Getaway Friday morning, August the 2nd, 2019. You're tuned into WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. We'll be back in just about 3 minutes.
It's now time for WWGH News. News about people, places, and plans. Brought to you live from the WWGH Newsroom.
This is Scott Spears in the WWGH Center. A piece of history is damaged after a semi-truck driver plowed through a historical schoolhouse. For nearly 11 hours, the truck was lodged inside Lynn School Tuesday, a historical schoolhouse. I'm just blown away because I've never thought this could happen, volunteer Zoni Compton said. Glass was shattered, floors have been damaged, and desks have been thrown around. The Marion County Sheriff said a driver lost control of his semi-truck after getting a flat tire and slammed into the side of the historic school building. To see that there was a truck through it, my first thought was that the building cannot fall. We have to preserve the building, director of the Marion County Historical Society, Brandy Wilson, said. Jim Greetham said his uncles went to the school. Original items like lunch boxes and signatures on the chalkboard are still inside. They didn't get the other side. There's a blackboard with Oliver's name on it, Greetham said. The Lynn School was built in 1897 and has been part of the community for more than 100 years. Back in 2003, Greetham's uncles, Oliver and Merle Hamilton, helped restore it. I think they'd be hurting a little bit, but glad the guy was okay, Greetham said. Before the truck was pulled out, a structural engineer came out and told crews to put braces on both sides of the building to prevent the walls from collapsing. It's just really an honor to have this, and it's important to our community, Wilson said. The driver did have minor injuries, but is okay. He was cited for not having control of his vehicle and not wearing a seatbelt.
Marion, Ohio Weather Team, I'm Zach Fuller. Sunshine today, we'll have the latest forecast coming up in your Weather Minute from the Marion, Ohio News Network. Did you know on this day in 1975, record heat gripped New England, highs of 104 degrees at Providence, Rhode Island, and 107 in Chester and New Bedford, Massachusetts, established the state records. The high along the coast of Maine was unprecedented, with afternoon highs of 101 degrees in Bar Harbor and 104 degrees in Jonesboro. Now you know with Marion, Ohio Weather and the Marion, Ohio News Network. From the Marion, Ohio Weather Center, this is your Weather Minute on WWGH 107.1 FM in Marion and online at WWGH1071.com. Friday in the Marion area, we'll see a slight chance of a shower or a thunderstorm, but overall mostly sunny, a high near 84 degrees. Tonight, mostly clear, a low around 59 degrees. Kickstart your weekend, we'll see sunny skies, a high near 84 degrees. Sunday, another slight chance of a shower after 2 p.m., but overall mostly sunny, a high near 84 degrees. And Monday, mostly sunny, a high near 84. Get the latest conditions and more on our website at weather43302.com. For the Marion, Ohio News Network, I'm Zach Fuller on Marion's Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 FM in Marion, and online at WWGH1071.com.
Go on this getaway Friday, August the 2nd, 2019, 34 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned into the early show here on WWGH Radio. Now, we have got a great guest this hour. He is one of my favorite people, and this being the first week of the early show here on WWGH Radio with myself at the helm, we you have some questions, because when you launch a new show, you want to know. Is it going to go? Are you going to be doing it for a while? Will people listen? You never know. Well, I may never know, and you may never know, but there's a gentleman who knows all. He knew all, and he has known all for a long time. All the great talk show hosts have known this, from Johnny Carson to David Letterman to Sally Jesse Raphael. He is world famous. He's an author, he's a huge talent, and the world's foremost mentalist, and a dear friend of this program. So what a pleasure to chat this half hour with one of the greats, one of the iconic people in the world of the entertainment show business arena, the legendary Amazing Kreskin. Kreskin, thank you for getting up early with us.
I was kidding when I was in a semi conscious, but I have my schedule. By the way, I'm just a little difficulty, maybe a little bit louder speaker, but I do hear you, and I'm still on the road all the time. I think I told you I got in at 4 o'clock this morning. You know what I get a kick out of? I am booked in different areas of the world, and many performances are private affairs at the home of executives or private parties and what have you. I get such a kick out of it because they'll mention if I'm in Ohio, shows like yours and programs they've heard me on, and they'll say to me, "Well, Preston, I've heard you so many times on with such and such person. Now, what's that person really like?" Now, they don't ask me about Scott Spears in that regard, but I get a kick out of it, Scott.
Now, when
people, I'm sorry, but it's a little bit difficult to hear you, but I do hear you. It feels very soft. By the way, congratulations on this time frame you're in now, because everybody driving to work that wants to know what's going on in the world, they first of all should tune into you, because not only are you on top of the news, but you're refreshing and you have a great insight into things, and also you're very personable, and I think that's the strongest that we need in broadcasting, you know.
Well, I appreciate that, Kreskin. Now, that's an interesting question, because an interesting statement for you to make. Are most people you run into in talk shows personable people?
A lot of them, the successful, that's a very good question, the successful ones truly are. I had an influence in my life. I think we mentioned the movie in the past that I did some months ago, the movie that's being written about my life, a motion picture, and they've been great interest. Now they're rewriting some of it because of my work with law enforcement, and that's a thing we might even mention later, what have you. But I had some very special influences. One was a man that you may not have been around enough then to see him, but this is a young man. He was on television. His name was Bishop Fulton J. Sheen. Did you ever see him? He had a TV show years ago. He was on Tuesday night. He was a Catholic bishop. But what was interesting, he was live, and he was on Tuesday. And, of course, Tuesday was Milton Berle's night. This is early days of television, and I want to assure you, your listeners, that I was not born in the 1880s, which is what the rumor is, but I did see TV when I was a kid. And he was on Tuesday at 8 o'clock live. And even though he was a Catholic bishop, I had friends, Jewish friends, who watched him all the time. I had some friends that were atheists. He had such a tremendous ability to communicate and a great, great sense of humor. And I was enamored with this person. Who would have dreamt? And by the way, I don't know if you know, probably don't know about this, but people are fascinated. My family, Scott, my family when I was a kid thought I was going to become a priest. Now, of course, what a mess of a church that would have been, that there would be more scandals than ever before. But I was, I was always fairly religious. I don't in public express things like this. But I was very close to some of the priests in the church that I went to, what have you, and that's not far from where I live even today. And of course, personally, I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to be an entertainer, to perform as I did. But this was a rumor in part of my family. Well, Bishop Sheen found this out years later when I got to know him, and we had a mutual admiration society. And by the way, he broke Milton Berle's record at one point, and finally was getting a TV Emmy Award and a few years after that. And I can remember as a kid seeing this, they said, and the award goes to His Excellency Bishop Fulton J. Sheen. And he walks out, and they give him this statue, and they say, we are very proud to give this to you, Your Excellency. And Bishop Sheen said, thank you very, very much. I want to thank all the listeners, the viewers, and my writers, Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John. That's the kind of sense of humor he had. So he had a story he told about me. This is, they get a kick out of this. He said, you know, sometimes he would be appearing in different parts of the country for corporate groups or what have you, and he was a speaker, and I was the entertainer later on. And he'd say, you know, I found out that the amazing Kreskin, who spends all his life reading our thoughts and what have you, that the family originally thought he should become a priest. Can you imagine this? Little Johnny is going to Holy Communion this next day, and he's in church Saturday night, and the church is dark because he's going to confession, and all these young people for their first Holy Communion have to go into confession first, and the next day they're getting their Holy Communion. And little Johnny goes into the booth, closes the door, and Father Kreskin moves the panel aside and says, young man, tell me your sins. Now, this is Bishop Sheen's job. And Johnny says, Johnny is stuttering and nervous. He says, Father, I lied to my mother 6 times. And Sheen says, Father Kreskin interrupts and says, you're not telling the truth, Johnny. It was 10 times and you know it. So would you want to go to confession if I had been priest, Scott? No.
It would be difficult because, you know, you could not pull the wool over your eyes.
Well, I would do it. I would, by the way, the other person, and Steve Allen, before he passed on, wrote me, Steve Allen, as you follow, you remember Steve Allen, the old Scott?
Oh, for years and years, when I was starting out in radio, one of my regular guests was his wife, Jane Meadows.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah, I love Jane Meadows.
Yes. Well, Steve Allen had wanted me, he wrote me a letter, in his material sent to me after he died. He says, please, you must do the life story of this person, the broadcast industry and historians are going to forget him, but he's a trailblazer, and it was a man that had a great influence on my life, who changed the whole format of radio, and that was Arthur Godfrey. And today, he's a forgotten man. Who's the guy that was on 60 Minutes that died last year that always had the sarcastic remarks, you know, in the last minutes he was on and said satirical things about politicians and what have you. I can't think of his name because I didn't know him. Do you know who I'm referring to? This guy.
I do. Andy Rooney.
Yeah, Andy Rooney. Andy Rooney worked for Godfrey before that, and Rooney said in many interviews, he's going to be a forgotten giant. But he changed the whole history of broadcasting because before that, people don't know this, and broadcasters, a lot of them, didn't realize this, but in the early days of broadcasting, when people went on their own talk shows and what have you, they wore tuxedos, the women wore evening gowns and what have you, even though there was no people seeing them. It wasn't even television. And they addressed their audience as Mr. and Mrs. and ladies and gentlemen and what have you. And when Godfrey had a local show before he became Mr. CBS and as Time Magazine, the front cover story said, became the most powerful salesman in the history in history as far as a salesman is concerned. But before that, he had a local show, and he was in an accident, and he was in the hospital, and they had to do some, he'd been hit by a car, driving and what have you, and he listened to radio, and he heard everybody saying, ladies and gentlemen, and so forth. He said, if I get a regular show on radio, I'm going to change that. And when he went on the air, he would talk to the audience as if he was only speaking to one person. He made it highly personalized. And by the way, if anyone wonders about the impact that this man had, let them know, because the Daily News here in New York criticized me and said Kreskin's talking through his head, and then they finally researched it. Had Eisenhower and the vice president been assassinated, it was a period during the World Scare and all that jazz and what have you, it was decided that Godfrey would take over the broadcasting until someone was found to go in place and what have you. And when I was criticized of this, I said, look at the discs. It turns out all the major stations had a disc that if something had happened, they would put the disc inside a machine, And all the business said was this: hello, this is Arthur. I'm not at a live microphone right now. Stay by your radio until I get to a live microphone. His voice was more recognized than any other person in the world. I only mention this to you because people are now uncovering the influences that took place on my life.
Oh, absolutely. And I think Arthur Godfrey was, he had it exactly right. Because when you start out a show on radio, and really even on television to a certain degree, and you say, ladies and gentlemen, you know, people take that in a different way. You're not really broad. It's not a Broadway play.
No, it is not. And it's not a play where there's a large audience, because he was very, very much aware, as he said to me, in discussions we had, but also interviews years later. He knew that at that time, the husband was at work, kids were on the way to school, and there was mom washing clothes, doing the house cleaning and what have you, and her only source of respite was to turn the radio on. So he would kid a lot of times and say, you know, you just heard the news, it's good weather and so forth, clear. And he says, I'm sitting here in my studio and it's raining cats and dogs outside and what have you. But he knew how people thought. He talked to them as an individual, person to person. And it became a very monumental style. I don't live in the past, but I don't forget the past, because many, many turning points took place as a result of that. For example, today, if you look at nighttime shows, and I'm not mentioning any specific ones, a lot of them don't have the flavor that Carson did and what have you, because what you don't know is they're taking breaks, they'll do an introduction over again and so forth. And Johnny Carson had a policy, because originally, the Tonight Tonight shows were done live, and Steve Allen was live. There was no turning around. So what did they do? A mistake took place. A guy walks on and falls on his face. I trip and I'm going on the show. You move on with the show and you work with it and you make something out of it. And it gives the feeling, the impact that it's real, it's happening as it is. And unfortunately today, a lot of live broadcasting in television is not live and is not happening as it is. And that's sad, and the public is becoming slowly aware of this.
You know, one of the things I think that Johnny Carson certainly understood, and people like Steve Allen, now part of, and Jack Parr, it certainly was circumstance, because in those days a lot of television just had to be live because of the lack of videotape. But I think what they understood was one of the great parts of being a host, because you're there day after day after day, and your guest is being a reactor. And if everything's right done, you've got to be a great reactor.
Let me tell you how astute this is. Some people whose names I would mention to you in broadcasting, but it wouldn't be fairly fair to do, in all fairness, because I don't want to minimize them, but they did not know this. Do you know the Scott that, now I did 88 Carson shows. When I was on with him, during a commercial break, there was no conversation between him and myself. No conversation at all. And that was, and he was so right, and Steve Allen understood this and what have you. Some of the best remarks are made off the cuff and spontaneously. And some of them could be amusing and intriguing or provocative, but to say, well, you mentioned that when we go on the air, the second time is not the same. Now, I will tell you something. It's gotten into print just recently, and I never talked about it. But Carson had a rule, and it's an education for many people in television doing talk shows and whatever, to understand this. He had a rule that he never saw the guest that was on in his office or dressing room before the show. He may have had them on a dozen times. It may be the first time they're on. He never saw them, because he wanted the excitement and the spontaneity of this person coming on, seeing him for the first time, and Carson meeting them for the first time. There were only two exceptions. There were only two exceptions in Carson's history. One was Orson Welles, and the other was yours truly. And in the case of yours truly, I planned to do something with Carson, which I probably talk to you about where I had the scene before the show to condition mentally, something between two chairs. I don't know if I ever told you that story. Did I, Scott, or not?
No, I don't think I've heard this one.
All right. I was due to run the Carson show, and I never did a rehearsal with them. We never rehearsed. Some people, they had to rehearse it because they were doing skits and what have you. But that's not in a dressing room, what have you. But and those were actors that were doing scenes. But anyway, we never met anybody before the show. So they called me and asked what I was going to do a week or two away. I'm traveling. And I said, I'm going to do this with Johnny. But listen to me. I have to see Johnny before the show. I said, I know he doesn't do that normally. I have to see him before the show. Well, they said, okay, we'll see. And then they called me back. And his secretary said, Carson, Johnny, everything's okay. Well, Scott, I get a television call about a week before Carson show. I don't know where I am in the country. And it's someone from NBC whom I do not know. And they said, this is Kreskin, the witness. We're talking to Kreskin. I said, yes. They said, you plan to do this with Johnny? I said, yes. They said, you're not to do this. Do you understand, Kreskin? You're not to do this. And I said, okay. And we forgot about it, and that's the case. And I think they were worried about his safety and what have you. Then, 2 or 3 days before the show, I get a call, and I'm in the Midwest at a university, and they said, when can Johnny talk? This is the Johnny secretary. When can Johnny talk to you, Kreskin? I said, well, I have a show tonight. I won't be finished until 9, 9:30, 10, but it's 2 hours. It's 2 hours early. They said, don't worry about it. But Johnny will call you. He'll call you. He needs to talk to you. I said, is everything okay? They said, she said, don't you worry about it. So I get a call from Johnny. I never speak to him before the show. Never. And I'm nervous about it. Is everything okay? I pick up the phone. Johnny says, Kreskin, how are you? I said, fine. I just was at a university. 2.5 hour show. He says, you're on in a couple of days. I said, yes. He said, I understand you got a call from NBC. I said, yes. Well, he had a description of NBC. There were four-letter words, Scott, that I don't want to mention now. Some people would know them, but you don't find them in the average dictionary. He never forgave NBC because in those days they didn't know any better, and it was true that Mike Pedler show and what have you. They erased the first 2 years of all the Carson shows. There were no records of them at all. As a result of that, he was so furious. He had a new contract, and he got a copy of every show, which was placed in concrete under the ground somewhere in California. So anyway, he said, they told you not to do this. We're going to do this. Do you hear me, Kreskin? We're going to do this. All right. The day of the show, a car picks me up here. I'm being driven to New York. I get out of the car. I go into the studio, and I'm in my dressing room, and I have to see him early before the show's on the air. There's a knock on the door, and it's Kreskin's secretary. She says, Kreskin, I'm to take you to Johnny's office. I said, yes, and we're walking. And she's shaking. And I said, are you okay? She says, oh, I'm okay. And she's shaking. I finally stop and say, can I ask you something? I don't mean to pry. Is something wrong? Is everything okay? She said, Kreskin, I both said, Johnny, I don't have any ears. She said, are you sure that you're supposed to meet with him in his dressing room? I said, yes. She said, you know, Johnny doesn't allow anybody, doesn't see anybody. I said, no, I spoke to Johnny. He agreed. And she says, okay. She was shaking, nervous, because they knew this was an Adam Wall. I go into the dressing room. There sits Johnny at a small round table. A light bulb overhead. Looks like a gambling guy that's going to go into some card game or what have you, because he's sitting there, but he's looking at the most important thing in all his show, and that's his monologue. He's got the table in front of him. He said, I said, Johnny, I need only about 5 or 6 minutes. He says, Kreskin, we're going to go through with it. He stood up. I talked to him, his eyes closed. He couldn't open his eyes, even though he was wide awake. And I said, Johnny, you respond to what I'm going to say. When I'm on the air, and then McMahon's saying next to you, this is going to happen, so forth, so forth, so forth. It's all over with. I release him. He said, okay, Kreskin, we're on the things. And we go on. And let me tell you what happened that night. I'm on the air, and I'm the last guest. And Carson says, Kreskin has something very special. What do you need from me, Kreskin? I said, let's walk over here. I said, there's two chairs set there, aren't there, and they're for you. I said, I want you to listen to my voice, Johnny. Your eyes are going to close. Zach closure button is becoming very rigid, like a barred steel rigid. And McMahon, Doc Sorensen, is dead. They don't know what's going to happen. There's no rehearsal. And I said, our announcer, I said, Johnny starts to fall, you catch him. He says, you're sure as hell I'm going to. And Johnny starts to fall backwards, and he catches him. I said, the two of you stretch between two chairs, put his head and shoulder on one of his feet and the other. Folks, this is not a magic act. This is not an illusion. I tapped into unconscious, locked his muscles. Would you come over here? And it was Bette Midler, and she says, no. I said, come over. Please come over. But she said, no, no. She was very nervous. And she wouldn't come over. And finally, Fred, the court over the person, says, but go over there. And she walks over. Months later, I had lunch with her in New York. She says, I thought I'd never be invited on the show again. She says, I couldn't believe what you asked me to do. I said, Bette, you can see there's nothing supporting Johnny. His head is on one chair, his feet are on the other, nothing in the middle. I want you to sit on him. She says, are you kidding me? I said, no, sit on him, lift your legs up. She sat there. A photographer was let into the theater, which doesn't really allow. That picture of that scene was on Parade Magazine on the Sunday supplement about a month or two later, all over the United States. And there he was suspended, but no trickery. I finally lifted her off. We lifted him off and stood him up. And slowly released his eyelids. When his eyes opened, he said, I would have thought that was a baby. It's unbelievable. And that was the time when NBC said, you're not allowed to do it, and I did it. And by the way, in the seats next to Fred de Cordova on the show were two men, and Carson nudged me before we started, and I got his message. They were two men from NBC. They were worried about his welfare, and his feeling was, Preston, quietly, then go to hell. So I thought you'd find it interesting. Very little known. That story is very little known.
That's a tremendous story, Kreskin. And as always, our time is flying by here with about 2 minutes left.
You know, Scott.
Yes.
I love working with you, and you're one of my special friends in this business, and I'm so happy for your success, really.
Well, my question is, because we all want to know at the end of the first week here, what do you think the chances are of this show being a go here in the morning?
Well, if it isn't a go, then I want to be interviewed by the station there, because the station has to realize that they've got a very special person there who can light up the world at a time when sometimes people are half awake, half asleep, not raring to go because they just need a stimulus. And you have it in the sound of your voice. I just think it's a natural. And I by the way, folks, understand this. I'm more awake now since Scott has talked to me, so I'm safe. Although, folks, I say this to Scott all the time. I want you folks to know, should I come on the air with him in person, because I'm in Ohio or what have you, and I would certainly come on with him in person. I promise you folks listening, I would dare not read Scott's on the air live. I'm only joking, Scott.
You know, that would be fun, because that's what people want to wake up to. They want to wake up to somebody reading somebody's thoughts.
You know, Scott, and by the way, Scott, the fact that your show is live and that there's a spontaneity about it, people have to realize there's no turning back. This is the thing that Godfrey realized. Even though Carson's show was videotaped and so forth, you would not see something over again, because, well, you know the story about my appearance on Steve Allen and tripping over the dais. I've told you that story, haven't I?
No, I don't think so.
All right. After Steve Allen left the Tonight Show and Carson took over, and Steve Allen went to L.A. and he had a late night show, college students. I was touring all the time, but I'm still going to college when I could get there, Seton Hall. We all watched him. He had great humor, but a great serious man, a great writer of books too, but a great humor. He heard about me. I wasn't on Carson the Tonight Shows then, and he flew me out to L.A. and he says, we have on a man with a great talent. Would you welcome this young man? His name is Kreskin. I hadn't been given the name Amazing. I walk on stage. Steve Allen's at the other end of the stage, standing elevated on a dais. I hadn't met him before, because I chose better not to meet him before the show, make it spontaneous. I'm walking towards Steve, looking at the camera. In those days, in the 60s, the lights were very hot and bright. That wasn't very wise of me. As I'm getting closer to Steve Allen, my eyes are getting blinded. I get to the dais. I trip over the dais and fall flat on my face. Of course, my family thinks it's the highlight of my career. Steve Allen was not a mocking type person. He says, "You're all right, Kreskin." We went on. I had a half an hour appearance with him. But Johnny Carson came home. He always taped his show in the afternoons with his wife. He turns on the TV and sees that Steve Allen is a mentalist. He watches the show, sees the incident, and 7 weeks later on his show creates a character called Karnak who fell over the desk.
That is a great story.
And the last show I did with Johnny, it was very moving because the public did not know that he was announcing his retirement. The rumors were out. But I had to, and I didn't say anything about his retiring or anything, but I said on the air, I said, "Johnny, I want to thank you for everything you've done for me, even when I'm not on the routine, the comment, what have you, and to keep, and I thank you for all the constant PR." And Johnny said, "Oh, the mighty Karnak, huh, Kreskin?" Some of the public didn't know what he meant, but those in the know that fall was stolen from me.
I always wondered why he tripped when he came out, and now we all know. Kreskin, oh gosh, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and I hope you come back really, really soon. You have a great weekend.
Godspeed in the spirit of broadcasting. Like I always say, I'll not say goodbye. Let's just say, Scott, to be continued.
To be continued. The amazing Kreskin, thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
All right, we'll be back in about 10 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
Important point. Fall in love. What?